Good morning. I would wager that all of you today, before you got here, looked in a mirror. We have this fascination with mirrors. In fact, if you watch people, it's very difficult for a human being to walk past a mirror without looking in a mirror. We have this concern about how we look. We're afraid something's out of place or something's in place we wish was somewhere else. We're constantly concerned about that. And every home has multiple mirrors. In my business, as a matter of almost 100%, when I have someone fall flat on their face or fall flat on their back, when I ask them, you know, what hurts or what doesn't hurt or what'd you do, consistently, time after time after time, they said, well, the first thing I did was look around and see if somebody saw me. Cracked their head open, broke their back, broke their arm, broke their leg, and they're concerned because somebody might have seen them. Somebody might have seen them. We have this obsession sometimes with how we look, both in how we look in our physical appearance and how our actions look to other people. Not all bad, not all good. God was concerned about appearances as well. He made a world that is full of various looks. Most of them good. Some of them ugly. But most of them beautiful. He could have made our whole world in blacks and whites, and it would have been entirely different. So this morning I want to talk about appearances. And I'm going to get there, but about halfway through I'll tell you why I want to talk about appearances. But I want to talk about appearances, about our physical appearances, about how our actions appear to others, how our words appear to others. So the first thing I have to do when I'm trying to figure out if I'm okay, and this is involving a lot of gray areas this morning, I'm going to be talking about a lot of blacks and whites. I'll be talking about a lot of grays, which is where the problem comes in a way. Blacks and whites are easier. The first thing I have to do is I just have to decide when I look in that mirror is how do I look to me? How do I look to me? So when you got up this morning, you got ready to come to church, you look in the mirror and say, well, you all right? Oops, forgot to comb the hair. Forgot my shoes. Physically, is it good or is it not good? Sometimes we're a little scary in the mornings to ourselves. I always tell people, if you think you're scared in the morning, I get up there in the morning, look in the mirror, and there's a doctor looking back at me. And there's something scarier than that. I don't know what it is. That's wild. I look at myself and I say, are you smart or are you not smart this morning? My morning is pretty dumb. Pretty dumb. But I make an evaluation about myself. I look at myself and I say, am I guilty this morning or am I innocent this morning? Am I feeling good about myself? Or am I not feeling good about myself? All those things that I think about others, I think about me, and I ask why or why not. Now, when I think about myself, obviously most important is what God thinks about me. And God gave His Son for me and loves me, so I needn't worry about the other, but I will. So all the other doesn't really matter, or shouldn't really matter, more importantly, shouldn't really matter whether you show up here with your hair combed or not, or new clothes or not, or washed or not, or dirty or not, shouldn't really matter. But I'm not just concerned with how I think I look. I'm concerned with how you think I look. Maybe sometimes more concerned about how you think I look than I am about how I think I look. So I'm concerned secondarily about how others should look at me. Others should look at me. In church, a lot of times we end up talking about shoulds. This morning we're going to talk about shoulds and things that are. And they aren't always the same. The way we should look at each other is John 7, beginning over verse 20. The people answered and said to Jesus, "Thou hast a devil, who goeth about to kill thee." Jesus answered and said to them, "I have done one work, and all ye marvel. Moses therefore gave unto you circumcision, and ye on the Sabbath day circumcise a man. If a man on the Sabbath day receives circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken, are ye angry at me, because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day? Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Don't judge as things appear. Don't judge as we think things are, or what we think motivations are, etc. We should judge righteous judgment. In 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, verse 12, it says, "We commend not ourselves again unto you, but give you occasion to glory on our behalf, that you may have somewhat to answer them which glory in appearance and not in heart." Glory in appearance and not in heart. So we should not judge another by their physical appearance. In the early part of James, it talks about if a man comes into your church and he's dressed in a certain way, don't go up and ask the people in the front row, "This guy looks really good. He looks like he might be a little wealthy. He feels like maybe a dominant person, an important person. Why don't you sit on the front row and you other guys sit in the back?" We don't do that. We don't have respect to person. You can't judge people that way, or we shouldn't. Or be too quick to judge not only their appearance but their actions, because sin is judged by God. So if I look at me as how I look, and I'm concerned about how I look, how you perceive me, I look at me, and I know how I should look at me. I look at you, and I know how you should look at you. And some of these things really shouldn't matter. But they do. There's a difference between shouldn't and reality. They do matter. How others should look at me and how others do look at me are two different things. Those are two different things for all of us. And even if these things shouldn't matter, they do. Even if I shouldn't be concerned about how I look, because it shouldn't matter, it does. If I shouldn't be concerned with how you look at me, because I have another judge other than you, I shouldn't worry about that. If I shouldn't, nonetheless, you do look at me in a certain way. And it does influence you, and it does influence me. So even if it shouldn't. So if I go for a job interview, don't ever let anybody tell you it doesn't make any difference what you wear. Don't ever let anybody tell you that. Because it does. I don't care what the job is. I don't care if you're going to go be doing the dirtiest job in the world. Don't show up dirty. You're not going to get the job. Nobody likes working with a dirty person. They don't mind working with a person who gets dirty, but nobody likes working with a dirty person. It makes a difference. Should it? Well, I might be the best mechanic, best plumber in the world. Might be absolutely the best. It shouldn't make any difference because I'm interviewing you for a mechanic's job here. I'm not interviewing you for a magazine model. I'm interviewing you for a mechanic's job. Shouldn't make any difference at all, but it does. But it does. If you were looking history and you look at a picture of Einstein, you would never hire him for anything. Man looks like a lunatic. In some ways, he was. He looks like a lunatic. Supposedly one of the brightest men worldly that has ever lived. If he showed up to interview with me, I would ask for help in the room just in case he went berserk on me. He was nuts. So it does make a difference. It does make a difference. And you know the Bible recognizes that. The Bible recognizes that. In 1 Samuel, the 9th chapter, verse 2, the children of Israel had been feeling kind of neglected, a little subpar, a little inferior, because they didn't have a king. Out of all the people they could have chosen for a king, listen to who they chose. Now, there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of a whole bunch of people, a mighty man of power, and he had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man. What difference does that make? A choice young man, and goodly. He's good looking. And there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person. He's not only good looking, he's really good looking. Goodlier person than he. From his shoulders and upward, he was higher than any of the people. He was tall, he looked like a king. All right. That's how we're going to choose. This guy is good looking. He looks like a king. He's big like a king. He must be a king. Saul make a very good king? Nope. We should judge on inward appearance, but we don't. Historically, people judge on outward things as well, and even God recognizes that. In 1 Samuel, go over a little bit farther, in 1 Samuel 16, when he is choosing a good king, oddly enough, he mentions the same stuff. Samuel had gone through all the sons of Jesse's. Don't you have any more sons? This isn't the one. He says, yeah, I got one more, the youngest. And he sent and brought him in. Now, he was ruddy and with all of a beautiful countenance and good to look to. What difference does that make? That shouldn't make any difference about whether you're a good king or not, but it does. It does. It shouldn't, maybe, but you better recognize that these things do make a difference. They make a difference, our appearance. Esther certainly wasn't chosen to be one of the ladies that was brought to the king because she was ugly as a doorpost. Didn't happen. Didn't happen. She was beautiful. And what's it say about Jesus? He hath no form or comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. Apparently it meant something. Why didn't God make his son beautiful? Why didn't he make him like Saul, handsome, more handsome than any other man in the land? Why not? It meant something. And sometimes that's not fair. The world we live in sometimes just isn't fair. It isn't the way it should be, but it's the way it is. It's the way it is. In Matthew 11, Jesus speaks of this. But whereunto shall I liken this generation? It is likened to children sitting in the markets and calling unto their fellows and saying, we have piped unto you, and you have not danced. We have mourned unto you, and you have not lamented. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, he's got a devil. And the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they said, behold, a man gluttonous and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. How do you win? Both sides. One of them did it, one of them didn't do it. They didn't like either one of them. So sometimes it's not fair. Sometimes not fair. Anytime you talk about appearances and how things look, we have to bounce off 1 Thessalonians 5 and 22, which is the wrong verse. So I have to bounce off it anyway. Where am I? Which says, avoid the appearance of evil. And we have heard people talk about all kinds of circumstances that we should avoid, things we should avoid, etc., because it looks bad. It looks bad. That isn't what that verse is about. That verse is about avoiding all different kinds of evil. All different kinds of evil. That isn't what that verse is about. But we have this fascination, this concern, sometimes legitimate, sometimes not, about how it looks. How's it look? I can remember wanting to do something as a child and as a young man and saying to my folks, I want to do this. And they said, well, how will that look? Well, is that important? Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. So we have how things look to ourselves. We have how things should look to others. We have how things do look to others. And the motivation of how I look at others and they look at me. In 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 12, says, we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. So we're judging our appearances, we're judging our activities, we're judging them by other people, right? Shouldn't do that. Shouldn't do that. Might be bad. Is not wise. Maybe. Maybe. Because the same guy turns right around and says, have you considered the Bereans? Have you considered them? How they study the scriptures and to see what's right? Well, what does it mean when I say, think about the Bereans and how you are? That's comparing. That's comparing ourselves among ourselves. That's what that is. In another place, he commends a congregation for committing funds to help the people at Jerusalem above and beyond what they were able. And says, you should look at them. Isn't that comparing yourselves among yourselves? So when we look at these things, motivation has something to do with that. Because when he said, consider the Bereans, he wasn't saying, well, you're kind of nuts and you're a little bit inferior because the Bereans are much better than you. He's saying, think about what they're doing in this specific instance because I want you to be like that. Not because I'm trying to tear you down, say you're inferior or any other thing. We know there are bad reasons for making various judgments and concerns about our looks and our actions. Jesus talks to those in Matthew 23 when it goes down a whole list of things the Pharisees did. A whole list of them. And he said they were full of deception and hypocrisy. We certainly don't want that. That's bad motivations. But on the other hand, Jesus did some things. Jesus did some things that Christians today might be reluctant to go along. Because it would look bad. In Matthew, the 9th chapter, Jesus was accused of eating with publicans and sinners. He wasn't accused. He was guilty. It came to pass that Jesus sat at meat in the house. Behold, many publicans and sinners. This isn't the high level of the society here. This isn't the high level of the religious people. These are the dregs at the bottom as far as society is concerned. As far as religious people, you just don't get near those folks. We know other times he was with prostitutes. What are you doing with a prostitute? What is the Son of God doing, even sitting down in the same room as a prostitute? What? How did that happen? That looks horrible. That looks horrible. Jesus goes on to say, they that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. They that are sick. Wasn't he concerned about how things looked? Well, yes and no. His motivation was to help them. So we need to be a little careful about how we judge how things look. Now, the one that really got me going was I was in a Bible study here a while back. And got to this point. And I want to read you some scriptures, and I want you to reconcile these in your mind, okay? Reconcile these scriptures, because the same person said them all and did them all. And some days after Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. And I'm in the wrong spot, I think. I am in the wrong spot. Then came he to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there, named Timothy, the son of a certain woman, which was a Jewess, and believed, but his father was a Greek, which was well reported of by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and took and circumcised him because of the Jews which were in those quarters, for they knew all that his father was a Greek. And as they went through the cities, they delivered them the decrees for to keep. They were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. Now keep that in mind. Same person said this. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. Behold, I, Paul, say unto you that if you be circumcised, Christ shall profit you nothing. For I testify again to every man that is circumcised that he is a debtor to do the whole law. Christ has become of no effect unto you. Whosoever you are justified by the law, you are fallen from grace. And he said again, is any man called being circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Is any called an uncircumcision? Let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing. And uncircumcision is nothing but the keeping of the commandments of God. The same person said, well, how do you reconcile those things? How do you reconcile those things? And this apostle says, circumcision is nothing. It doesn't amount to anything. It means if you take it as a means of keeping the law, that you have to keep the whole law. We know what happened to that. Nobody did it. Couldn't do it. Turns right around, meets Timothy, and takes him and circumcises him. I'm confused. There has to be some understanding and motivation in interpreting actions and how people are. Paul's motivation in Galatians and 1 Corinthians is to display to the people and instruct the people that circumcision in the old law as a way of keeping the old law and as being acceptable to God was unnecessary and in fact and sometimes detrimental. His motivation for circumcising Timothy was so the Jews would listen to him. Now there's a step. That's what was going on. His motivations were different. But what I want you to understand is the motivations changes the interpretation of what was said and done. Changes the interpretation. You remember in 1 Corinthians, Paul did the same thing with what you eat. With meat. He said, meat's offered to idols. It's okay with me if you eat it. That idol's nothing. It's okay with me. But if there's someone there who doesn't understand that, I won't eat it as long as the earth shall stand. So his motivations were different in the two circumstances. Which brings us to the fifth thing. The effect of others and on others of how I look. The effect on others of how I look. Whether we live unto the Lord, and whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live therefore or die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ both died and rose and revived, that he might be Lord both of the dead and living. But why dost thou judge thy brother? Why dost thou set it not thy brother? For we also stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For it is written, as I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then, every one of us shall give account of himself to God. Let us not therefore judge one another any more, but judge us rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. I know and am persuaded by the Lord Jesus that there is nothing unclean of itself, but to him that esteemeth anything to be unclean, to him it is unclean. But if thy brother be grieved with thy meat, now walkest thou not charitably. Destroy not him with thy meat for whom Christ died. Let not your good, let not your good be evil spoken of. Don't judge another on these things. Why? Because it's not your place. It's not your place. You're not a judge. You're not a judge. And when you do that, you ignore your own faults and you ignore the effect that you have on others. You ignore that. It's not loving. Paul said in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, verses 15 on, I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things, that should be so done unto me, for it were better for me to die than any man should make my glorying void, for though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me, yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. But though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all. That's a little deceptive. Though I be free from all men, yet I made myself servant to all that I might gain the more. And to Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain Jews. To them that are under law, as under law, that I might gain them that are under law. To them that are without law, as without law, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Became all things. He changed his appearance. He changed his actions, dependent upon where he was, who was listening, and what his motivations were. He changed them. So did Paul act the same when he was with the Jews as he did when he was with the Gentiles? No. Now, was right right still? Right was still right. Sin was still sin. Commandments were still commandments. But Paul, with the Jews, didn't act the same way as Paul with the Gentiles did. Why was he concerned about circumcising Timothy? His motivation was to save some. So our motivations, my motivations, your motivations, affects how we look and how I look. Paul was aware of appearances, and he used them. And we need to be aware of our effect, the effect of how we look, and it has an effect. Whether it should or should not, it has an effect. The effect of how we look, the effect of how we act, the effect of our words and any other thing that we do has an effect. And we have to be concerned about how we look, but on the right basis of trying to serve God. And so we just had the verse in Philippians 2 and 4 that Matt was teaching in class. Look not only on the things of yourselves, but on things of others. Be concerned about them. Be concerned about what they do. I got a few tail ends to make up here. In 1 Timothy, the 2nd chapter, verse 9, concerned about how we look. Like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. Why do you wear jewelry? You wear jewelry to affect how you look. Why do I wear the shirt? I wore this shirt, for good or bad, to affect how I looked. That's what we do. Okay? That's what we do. Is there something wrong with that? Depends. depends on how I feel about it, how you should feel about it, how you really do feel about it, and on my motivations. It depends on all those things. You can't make blanket rules that you can't wear jewelry, you can't do this. It's not what he's talking about. He's talking about your emphasis is the good works. You identify yourself by your good works, not how big your diamond was or how much jewelry you got on or anything else. And that's not just women, that's guys as well. Interestingly, it's obviously not wrong. Think about the story, and I am a firm believer that Jesus, even incidentally, never uses an example in a parable that he would consider wrong. And that's another story, but you can just think about that. I don't think he ever, even incidental to the parable itself, would use an example that would be regarded as wrong. So we think about the story of the prodigal son. Prodigal son takes his inheritance, he runs off, he blows it, he comes back, he says, I'm not worthy to be thy servant. What is the demonstration of the father's love? He hugs him, he gives him a ring, he gives him a robe, and they have a feast. Now, is that all important? Would he have been loved less if the father hadn't given him a ring and hadn't given him robes and hadn't given him a feast? No. It was a demonstration of the father's love. Motivation. Motivation, again, in interpretation. So as we look at some things that people have wallowed for years, if we look at a church building, and you look at a church building and it has stained glass, huge vaulted ceilings. Remember the one in Rome that Mark I went to? It was cool. I don't even know how far it was across that thing. It's more like a pasture than inside a building. It was forever. And you could stand on one side and whisper next to the column, and you could hear it on the other side play this day. If we had that, I wouldn't be doing that, okay? Hitting the mic. So, stained glass, vaulted ceilings, various architecture. Is that wrong? Depends on the motivation. That's not to be our main emphasis, is it? But once you start making judgments about things, where are you going to stop? Maybe it's wrong to have soft seats. You people should be sitting on hard seats. Hard, I don't know where you stop. But Jesus said in John 13:35, that a way that people should know us is not because of our stained glass windows and our vaulted ceilings and our architecture, but because of the love we have for one another. That's the main focus. Apply the rules. The rules will, how do I look at it? How others should look at it? How others do look at it? And my motivation. And if you apply the rules, then you will make a, in my estimation, more wise judgment. You know, change is normal. We hate it. I really hate change. I really hate change. For a lot of reasons, you come to my office, you will not find an electronic medical record there. I'm tempted to say till the day I die, but I might die too soon. You will not find it for a lot of reasons. One of them, which I consider lesser, is I hate change. I have a lot of others, but I hate change. I don't like change. But guess what? Change happens in our world. Change happens. So as I'm judging other people, their actions, their words, how they look, no tie, no suit, skirts here, skirts there, things change. Go back 50 years? Yeah, probably 50 years. 50 years, maybe 65 or 70. Go back 65, 70 years. A First Lady of the United States or a senator, I don't know if we had any female senators then, of the United States would not be caught dead in slacks. Now we don't think anything of it for the First Lady to be dressed nicely in slacks. I don't think anything of it. Times have changed. Things have changed. But sometimes that gets ahead of me. And I don't realize that things change. And I use wrong judgment. I also want to warn us that, believe it or not, sometimes things, the same thing, looks different to people in the church than it does to people out of the church. And that works both ways. People out of the church don't see the same thing we saw. They just don't. We're from different places. Maybe that's okay. But we have to recognize that they don't see and interpret the same things that we do. And God is concerned about how the world perceives us. He is concerned. Thirdly, reality is always somewhere in the middle. How I think I look and how I do look to you involves my perception of me and involves your perception of me. And reality is probably somewhere in the middle. I probably don't have it right, and you probably don't have it right. And we need to understand that. And lastly, good can appear bad. Good can appear bad if we don't apply these rules. So what if I'm sitting in class, and I'm sitting there, and I question your interpretation of the scripture? Is that good or is that bad? I don't know. Don't know. Got to go through my rules. I'm not sure I know enough about your motivations to tell. But if I, or my motivations in this case, as I gave you the story, am I asking the question because I'm trying to learn? Or am I asking the question to try to throw Matt off kelter so he doesn't know what he's talking about? What am I doing? Same thing. Same action. Same words. But different results. Could be either. So we in our society are very, very concerned with how I look. I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look bad. And we need to judge that on how I think it looks, how it should look to others, how it does look to others, their motivations, and the effect it has on other people. Those are the things I use to make those decisions on what I do and how I react. But it's not always as clear-cut as we might think. It's not always as easy as we might think. We need to be careful with it. I'm going to close with a reading here. You know, God really, I won't say he doesn't care how you look, because he made you, so he must. But I don't think he's that concerned about it. But how you look physically. I think he is concerned about how we are. My body will show up in front of the judgment seat. But what I'm going to be judged on is not my height or my weight or anything else, but my character and how that complies with God's. And how much I've utilized his forgiveness. I'm going to read just three verses from Isaiah 55. I was struck with how much this says about our invitation. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters, and he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come, buy wine and milk, without money and without price. Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, or your labor for that which satisfieth not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in fatness. Incline your ear, come unto me. Hear, and your soul shall live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you. That's what God has offered us. I'm sure glad God isn't as concerned about how I look. I wish I were more careful about how I determine how I look and how I determine when it's important. What is important is how God looks at us. He's offered us that invitation. He's looking at us. It's important that we understand our position in front of God and how he sees us. and make sure that we're right with Him. We're off the invitation as we stand and sing the closing song.